Hello and welcome to the Coda Career Podcast. My name is Cameron Blackwood. I'm a former technical recruiter and now a software engineer. I interview people from across the world of tech to give you the insight that you need to level up in your career, whether you wrote Hello World last week or whether you're an industry veteran. This week, I'm joined by two really exciting guests who are currently looking to shake up the world of Web3. There's barely any Web3 developers in the world right now, despite it being a massive industry. Dan and Callum are from a company called Calyptus. Calyptus aims to take experienced software engineers and teach them the relevant Web3 technologies that they can use to advance their career in this emerging industry. If you're at all interested in what the future of the web could look like, then this podcast is certainly worth a listen. Before we get started, please do consider checking out our Patreon for some amazing member-only benefits and join our free Discord server. But without further ado, it's time to grab a coffee, push those commits, and enjoy the show. Hey guys, thanks so much for joining me. How are you both doing?
Doing very well, Cam. How are you doing?
Yeah, not bad, thanks. Not bad. Keeping on, so can't complain. For the audience that haven't come across you before, do you want to both explain a little bit about who you are and what you're working on? I recognise my questioning is a bit fumbled here, but because this is the first time, actually, if listeners haven't noticed, we have more than one guest on today.
We're very lucky to be here, that's for sure. Thanks for having us, Cam, and thanks for listening, everyone. I'm Callum, a co-founder at Calyptus. We are a training and employment platform to transform software developers into blockchain developers. We're recently started, only 3 or 4 months old, and it's been an exciting journey to date. So looking forward to telling you all about it.
Brilliant. And I'm Dan, Callum's my better half. I am also co-founder at Calyptus. Excited to be on the show, Cam.
Oh, great to have you both here. So the way we like to warm things up normally on Coda Career is some quick fire questions. So hopefully you guys have some answers stored for those ones. Usually some interesting stuff comes out of this. So I guess we'll just have to do it. One of you will just have to jump in first. I'm not used to doing it this way. So for each of you, what was your first ever computer?
It's embarrassing. I don't even know, Cam. I remember that it was blue and it was a brick, and it took about 10 minutes to turn on and off. But it just about lasted my school days. It did me well.
Mine was a Windows 98. It was my dad's hand-me-down. It took about 15 minutes to fire up. I don't think it had internet either. It had like no ADSL or dial-up tone. It was just I just played games on it, you know, like Rollercoaster Tycoon and Sims and Bill's Desktop.
Rollercoaster Tycoon was quality. That was one of my favorites when I was a kid as well. It was really good. Yeah, I think mine was my first one was 98 as well. I had someone on recently who his first computer was a 2014 Mac. I was like, the kids these days. some of the guests again. Gen Z. Yeah, it feels weird not being a super young one anymore. For each of you, obviously you're both, I believe you're both working in London at the moment, but what's your favourite tech cities?
It's a really difficult question. I want to say London, but actually Dan and I have been speaking with a lot of people out in Singapore recently, and it seems that, yeah, there's a whole bunch of incredibly smart and forward-thinking folks from over there, so I'm going to go Singapore, a bit out there.
I mean, just to not be boring and say London, as much as I don't know any better, Miami is probably the place to be right now in the blockchain tech scene. So I'll go for that one.
Nice. Yeah, I've heard a lot about Miami's blockchain scene. I guess it's big in Singapore then as well, like you're saying, because I guess because of the financial scene there is huge, right? So I guess it would make sense for it to be a blockchain center. So a lot of the potential partnerships you're doing, is that out there or?
Not at first. At first, that will be very much Europe focused, but we are intending to go global with Calyptus pretty quickly. And yeah, you're absolutely right about Miami too. I think the reason why they've got such a thriving scene is a lot due to their mayor, who is really pushing blockchain and crypto narrative forward, which is really exciting to see.
Interesting. It's quite odd to have quite a switched on politician to technology, but I like to hear it. Cool. And for each of you, what kind of music do you like to listen to while you're building building the Web3 accelerator?
Ambience music, anything that just doesn't have any lyrics or anything that's too catchy. Otherwise, like, my brain starts wanting to dance along and I just don't get any real work done. So.
Similar sort of thing for me, actually. I find that if I listen to too many lyrics, I'm very distracted. So it's like, I don't know, Bonobo, Ali Farkatore, those sorts of lovely kind of bop along, but not too many lyrics involved.
Yeah, it's a similar case to me. I find a lot of the devs that come on here as well are the same thing, where it's just lyrics can clash with the thought process a little bit. I've never been able to understand people that can listen to podcasts while they code, unless it's Code a Career, in which case obviously listen away. But
I second that message. Brain a little bit.
Yeah. And for each of you, when you do work, I mean, most people I've spoken to that are in like Web3 and blockchain, they tend to be night owls. Would you say you guys are night owls or early birds?
See, I've always been a night owl. I think it's because, even being at like my school, I was always 10 minutes up the road. So, you know, I just roll out of bed and run down the hill. So, I was never really a early bird, and I used to stay up quite late. I think that's kind of stuck. But now we're startup founders, 12-hour days or so. It's early bird and night owl, I think.
Yeah, I would agree that I definitely used to be a night owl. Like at university, not doing my essays and whatnot, and staying up all night to complete them. But these days, I've just a couple of years ago got myself a dog, and she requires walking very early in the morning. So I am very much an early bird now, and I do love the feeling of getting to lunch and feeling like I've been really productive already, and like there's more to come still. So yeah, I'd say early bird now, and I'm starting just about to enjoy it.
Yeah, dogs definitely force that change. Like whenever I'm at my parents, they've got two collies, and it's just like there's just no getting up past 6 a.m. really, because they will just run in, just jump on you, like all the rest of it. Like they won't let you sleep.
It's lovely most of the time until you've had a few drinks the night before, and then it's not quite so nice.
Yeah, I can relate, unfortunately. I mean, I can definitely tell that your answers for what you wanted to the next question is what you each want to do when you're a kid. And blockchain straight up was not a thing when we were kids. So what did you each want to do before blockchain came on the radar?
I mean, it's quite funny you pulled Roller Coaster Tycoon out, because I actually wanted to be a roller coaster designer. That was the ideal situation. And then it got more serious, and I was thinking, oh, you know, actually maybe like an architect and building something that's a bit more professionalized. And then actually I was told that architects have a really high failure rate. So my dreams were shattered, and I thought I have to start again. But yeah, it started with roller coaster design. I went downhill from there.
Love that, Dan. Mine's quite cheesy, to be honest. I have always wanted to start a business. I did that whole selling sweets out of my locker at school. And I knew I was going to find something that I was passionate about, and as passionate about as sweets. And here I am. Yeah, crypto captured me about 5 or 6 years ago, and haven't been able to stop falling down rabbit hole after rabbit hole since. So, yeah, pleased to be doing something, and I guess fulfilling a childhood dream.
Very nice. Yeah, there was always that kid in every school, no matter, I'm sure, whatever country you grew up in, there's always that kid in school that made a packet load selling sweets. So yeah, I wish I'd done it, but my mum didn't have a Costco membership, so I couldn't get the cheap stock.
Honestly, it was brilliant. I was selling, it was 3 for £1 on those sweets, so I could sell one packet of them for £2. Easy.
Good work.
Can you still do that?
Never made easier money. Probably couldn't anymore.
So we've talked a bit about blockchain and Web3 already, and obviously not everyone who listens to this will be that familiar with that world, because I think most guests I've had on before are more in sort of conventional software engineering. So in layman's terms, can you guys like outline like what Web3 is and why people should be excited about it?
Yeah, sure. I think I'll take that one. I think the simplest way to put it is that Web3 is the ownership economy. There are no intermediaries and it is decentralized by nature. So, you know, take yourself back to the 90s. As the internet was gaining steam, websites were developed by corporations, and it was very difficult for your average Joe or Jess to create that own content. That was called Web 1, if you like. Web 2 came about when social media was born. Suddenly it was easy for consumers to generate their own content on the internet. Yet this content is ultimately owned, again, by the corporations that own those platforms that we post on, so Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, Instagram. Web 3 then is a step change. We now have blockchain technology, a new method of storing data online that enables both encryption and distributed computing. To put that simply, these concepts together mean that data can be stored in a way that it's only ever under the control of the person who owns it. Now, you probably can hear my dog groaning in the background. My apologies. So,
with the stomach.
Yeah. I think that there's other really important aspects of Web3. It's built on open source software. It's trustless and it's permissionless. And what this does is it empowers the user and negates the need for a third party when sending Bitcoin to a friend, for example. So to tie that up, back in the 90s, we had Web 1. Think of that as being able to read on the internet. In the mid-2000s, Web 2 was upon us, and this was primarily user-generated content. So think of that as both read and write. Finally, then, Web 3 dawned just a few years back. And what it enables the average user to do is not only read content, write and distribute their own content, but also have sole ownership of that content. So read, write, and own. I hope that makes sense, Cam.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, it's a really nice, concise explanation, because Web3 is sometimes one of those things where you ask 10 people what it is and you get 10 different responses. But yeah, it's a really good way of explaining it. And how did you each find yourselves in this industry? Because it's a really something that's right at the forefront. So it's a tough one to break into. And a lot of the time it's clouded in mystery about how people actually get involved.
Yeah, mine was pretty kind of unassuming. Technology's always, you know, been something that's interested me, but I somewhat stumbled across Bitcoin when at university in about 2013. Very sadly, did not take the time to learn about it, wrote it off pretty quickly, and it wasn't until the summer of 2017 or so when a close friend of mine introduced me to Ethereum, and I started reading up on it and saw the impact that it could make. I must be honest, I dipped my toe in with a small investment, which perhaps, you know, isn't necessarily the best way to go about it. But I found that having some money invested meant that I was much more invested myself. It made it much more easy for me to do the reading and the work necessary to learn these things. So, you know, for some time in 2017, the prices went up. So I was even more, you know, obsessed with it. I thought it was brilliant. But that wasn't to last. In 2018, we know what happened. The market nosedived. And whilst I wasn't doing so well on the investment side, my conviction was really, really strong. And I spent the next few years, I guess, just delving deeper, understanding the different protocols and starting to follow and speak with people in the industry. And then, you know, fast forward to 2021, and those investments had come good, and I was desperate to do something myself within the ecosystem. And after a chance encounter with one of our friends, a guy called Tim, the idea for Calyptus was born, and here we are today.
Yeah, and I mean, my path started in 2017. I had my very first job was an internship at this wealth management firm in St. Albans, and it wasn't really my cup of tea. It was just a bit dry in terms of dealing with like investing in pensions and stuff. I've always been more on the adventurous side of investing, and there was this really smart techie guy, the tech lead at the Wealth Managers. And we used to talk about a lot of weird and wonderful stuff in the tech industry. He like introduced me to waitbutwhy.com about how people try to piece together how and why the world works in humorous ways. And one of those things was that he started talking to me about Ethereum in summer 2017. And he called it this, you know, this new supercomputer, which was using blockchain technology, much like Bitcoin. And from then on, I was hooked. I read like Nathaniel Popper's Digital Gold book, which was, I can highly recommend to anyone wanting to, you know, explore the originations of Bitcoin and how it was almost built, changing hands between radicalists and neoliberals and tech enthusiasts to Wall Street bankers. It was, you know, I just got completely immersed in it. A lot of YouTube videos, articles, and Twitter. And at that point, I either thought I leave my wealth management career behind, or, you know, I follow something else. And I thought, let's just follow something else, because I had so many friends and family wanting to invest in crypto. I was one of the only people who knew how to trade and store. And so I just had so many people asking me whether I could be their portfolio manager, to the point where, you know, I was setting up Coinbase accounts, I was trading for them. Even my girlfriend's step grandma was one of my shrewdest investors. She dumped in at 8K in Bitcoin and jumped out at 16K 2 weeks later. So it started with this idea around cryptocurrency early on. And then, of course, the first bull run came to an end and it dropped significantly. I had to find a normal job because I couldn't pay the bills living in London. So I moved into venture capital for about 3 or 4 years from there, because I fell in love with researching emerging technologies out of the back of it. And then, yeah, 3 or 4 years later, it just felt the right time for us to, you know, finally actually build something where it's using our passion and also our experience that we've learned over the last 3 or 4 years for myself and Callum.
Sounds really exciting. And I mean, I was going to ask this later on anyway, but I feel like this has kind of like led us quite nicely to this point. So what actually is Calyptus, and why should people be so excited about what you guys are working on?
Yeah, so as Callum was referring to earlier, you know, a good friend of ours in web development, a super, super smart guy. This was only about 4 months ago over Christmas, went for a beer with him, and he was keen to enter the Web3 space as a developer. And given myself and Callum have been in crypto for the last 4 or 5 years, you know, we knew about non-technical education. We didn't know about technical education and where someone like himself could go. And it caused this serendipitous thing where we started researching the problem into more depths, and this kind of just gaping hole of or like a black hole of issues just appeared. Like, and we just realized that you've got this industry that's worth about $2 trillion and you only have several hundred thousand blockchain developers sustaining it. Like, there's so much weight on their shoulders, creating so much value, and you know, there's so much expectation, there's so much hype around this industry, and there are not many people who can actually live up to it. You know, there's $32 billion was invested into this industry last year from VCs, and where can that money go if we don't have the talent to actually build better things in Web3? To the point now where individuals are getting paid like 87% higher in salaries in Web3 because there isn't enough demand, enough supply, sorry. There's a bigger issue here at play, which is, you know, the industry has so much opportunity potential, not just in finance, but like in supply chain management or for music or for art or for law. And, you know, we just need more and better builders in this ecosystem to make it thrive. And so what we realize is that, you know, you have to build this trusted bridge between Web2 and Web3. The idea being that, you know, let's build like a program which can train up these individuals who are software developers and make them real builders in this ecosystem. So the solution is an 8-week full-time expert-led program which will transform these developers into blockchain developers. The whole idea behind it is that you have all these other competitors which are looking at it on a part-time basis or on-demand basis, but, you know, no one's really tackling it head-on with a fully immersive, full-time experience where we can actually challenge this reputation of hacks and scams and start making builders who really know what they're doing in the industry, really know how to build in this industry. And we're starting with smart contract development. So Ethereum uses smart contracts, which is the execution layer of Ethereum. I won't get too complicated here, but what smart contracts do is that they replace intermediaries. So they, you know, if you are to use a bank account, like a bank, then you can replace your bank at NatWest. If you are to use an underwriter for insurance, you can replace an insurer. So imagine if there's a car crash, God forbid, and you insured your car, you have things called oracles, which are real world things that track events. They'll tell there's a car crash. They'll then pay out automatically to the individual who had the car crash, knowing full well that car had crashed. And so you don't need these intermediaries anymore. And so what you're doing here is you've got smart contract developers who can build these automated tools to make intermediaries just disappear. It's this whole decentralized nature of Web3. And so what we want to teach during our program is, you know, an introduction to Ethereum, how to build your first smart contract, how to test smart contracts using the likes of Hardhat and Waffle, how to look at smart contract design using like Open Zeppelin, interacting with your smart contracts. And the whole idea is this whole 8-week period is that you're building DAOs or building a DeFi project or building an NFT. And you're literally at the very end going to have this whole plethora of projects you've worked towards within the Web3 space that as soon as you've left, we want to plant you at a really exciting forward-thinking company of your choice, of course, that really takes your passion. So our number one objective is to make sure that we get whoever comes into our program a job at the end of it. And we're currently partnering with dozens, if not hundreds of startups to ensure that we find individuals the right job in this industry and actually build it for the better.
Yeah, absolutely. That sounds really cool. And I did have one of those moments when I saw you post on LinkedIn about it and I was like, oh, this looks cool. And then I read about it and I was like, wow, like I can't believe this hasn't been like, you know, it was one of those moments where it's like, this is really cool. And like, I'm amazed that this isn't already such a huge ecosystem I'm really curious about Web3 myself as a programmer, and I have been learning a bit of Solidity and stuff. And the information out there is just so distributed, which sounds like a good thing when we're talking about blockchain. But I can't think of the right word. Sparse is probably the word I'm looking for. It's mm-hmm. really tough to actually get a proper defined program. And as you say, there are sort of scams and stuff out there. So having actually something defined, and the bootcamp model is well known from conventional web development, lots of people get into it that way. The fact that there was nothing like that for Web3 always surprised me. So that's why I was so so impressed with what you guys are doing. And I realized I was like, I need to get them on the podcast when I saw. So that's really cool. And if people want to get into Web3, either if they've got no programming experience or they are what we call like a conventional developer, obviously once your program launches, there is one answer to that. It's get onto your program. But other than that, are there any strategies that people can use to get into this world, potentially even in a non-programming role?
Yeah, I mean, so... first and foremost, like if you want to get into this world, like there are a bunch of non-technical courses that you can start with. I started on the blockchain strategy course that Oxford University produced in 2018. That was a really good grounding for me in terms of learning the theory behind blockchain. But there's some other great ones out there, like Unit Masters, which is free. It's 6 weeks long. There's one called Block Leap, which is headed by an academic named Philippe Medus. There's Coursera, there's Udemy. All these courses are fantastic for just getting a footing in the industry and just understanding kind of blockchain 101 and how things work. There's some fantastic individuals to follow on LinkedIn, like Pete Huang, for example, who works at Coinbase now. Just some fantastic content. He calls himself a Web3 realist, and I love that kind of angle, which is, look, there's a bad side and a good side to crypto. Let's actually decipher that, and let's show how, let's not try and cause hype, let's actually create real value in this ecosystem. and show what it can do. There's Anthony Day, who is at IBM. I think he's just moved, actually. Laurie Keogh at Coinbase as well. And a lady called Susanna Esteban, who's one of the founding members at Oxford Blockchain Foundation. Those are some great people to follow on LinkedIn, who just create content every day to understand what's happening in the ecosystem. And on top of that, like the key thing for us is that blockchain is if you want to become a developer in this space, it's going from one to two, then going from zero to one. So if you want to be a blockchain developer, you're going to need some sort of foundational level of knowledge in JavaScript or C++ or likes of Python, because they're very similar languages to Solidity, which is the smart contract language on Ethereum. So to start with JavaScript or those languages is fantastic, and I'm sure you've spoken about many of them before, but it's just to learn those basics in terms of arrays on constants or variables, loops, all those kind of key things you need to learn. And there's there's free code camp, there's Khan Academy. I went on Code Academy last year just to try out Python and data analytics. But once you've got that grounding and the non-technical skills, that's when you can start actually learning Solidity and entering the space via something like what we're building. Or there's other free courses out there or part-time courses if that's more flexible for your living, such as Udemy or Coursera and Udacity, for example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and because you actually anticipated a question I was going to ask related to that about whether it is better to just jump straight into it or to learn a more established programming language first. And yeah, it's funny, sometimes I feel like this podcast can just be distilled down to just learn JavaScript or Python first before you do anything else.
That's it.
People always want to run before they walk, and like I'm forever telling people, just learn one of those two, and then from there you can do whatever you want to do. Just you need to get the fundamentals in one of those two languages first, because that's where the big ecosystem is, that's where a load of the good beginning resources are. And I mean, having written a bit of Solidity myself, I'm like grateful that I know JavaScript, because it's not that it's hard, it's just that it's helpful to have the grounding first. And I was surprised with how easy it was to actually jump over to it. It's not too different for anyone that's experienced as a developer themselves, but it's actually just, I found it tricky. Actually, it's not hard to code, but it's hard to actually get your head around the whole smart contract, writing the actual smart contract. Writing the code is simple, but I guess that's always the way with these things, for sure. And I guess that's why going on some kind of structured course, is that's where the value add is, right? Especially if with the employment support too, because the employment market is a little bit confusing at the best of times. And I mean, on a macro level as well, we're obviously all based in the UK, and the majority of listeners are in the UK. What do you each think that the government can do to embrace Web3/decentralized finance? I mean, there's obviously been a bit of chat about GovCoin. Take that as you will. But what do you each think that we can do to actually embrace this and not sort of fear it, which often seems to be the way?
it sadly does seem to be the way pretty often. But just actually a couple of weeks ago, the UK government announced its ambition to become a global crypto hub, which certainly sounds very positive. And, the UK, thankfully, does have a very long history of being at the forefront of particularly financial innovation. So they've laid out a few areas that they are going to really work on. You've kind of brought one up already, CBDCs, central bank digital currencies. So they will be a currency pegged to the pound in this case, but you can have a digital currency pegged to any currency at all in the world. And again, what that does is it reduces borders, it makes the system much more efficient. So they are actively looking at the moment at regulating stablecoins so that they can be used for everyday matters in our lives. They're also doing lots of other work. For example, they're launching a regulatory sandbox, which is essentially an environment where crypto businesses or blockchain focused businesses can come and explore and innovate in the field without the fear of the regulators kind of bearing down on them. So there's certainly a lot of hope there that this is going to enhance the various sectors of the economy. I think that they're even planning to launch an NFT project. So it's going to be by the Royal Mint. And I'm not entirely sure whether it'll have utility, whether it will be a collectible. I know that there's lots of collectible coins already out there. So perhaps they're going to release their own kind of profile picture NFT collection. I'd be probably somewhat surprised with that. But they are releasing an NFT, which is exciting, and it definitely demonstrates that the government are not ignoring cryptocurrencies and things like NFTs any longer. But you know, for us and for Calyptus, we kind of talk about security an awful lot. So in my eyes, it's a lot about the government ensuring that we have very strong protections for consumers. So encouraging people to protect themselves against scammers, for example. Educating is the important word. There's a lot of education that needs to be done around cryptocurrency. It's a very new thing, and there's different ways of interacting with cryptocurrency. So, for example, people need to understand that they should never share their private keys with anybody, because if you lose your money in cryptocurrency, there is no bank that you can go and ask for it back from. There is no insurance. It is lost. So you need to be double and triple checking every website that you put in, any website that you're accessing. You need to keep your private keys in what's called cold storage, so not online. Use that old thing called a pen and paper, and really they need to just keep pushing the message to do your own research into cryptocurrency projects and be hyper vigilant on following investments, because it's a bit like the Wild West out there.
Yeah, definitely, and in good ways and bad ways. I mean, it's that scams are nothing new. I think sometimes a lot of the legacy finance types like to push back, oh, it's so scammy. But like, you know, obviously in the legacy financial system, there are still so many scams out there. So I think sometimes people overegg that aspect of it. But yeah, it definitely exists.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right, Cam. And I think, TradFi gives crypto a pretty bad name, given that, you know, there's banks left, right and center being fined hundreds of millions for fraud or helping people launder money. I think there's massive issues in both. The important thing is that the control is put back in the end user's hands with cryptocurrency and with decentralization. And for me, that is really important. And that spells the beginning of what I see as a revolution. I very much believe that this will be the future, and that hopefully governments won't get their hands on our money in the future.
Yeah, go full out. Is it El Salvador where they've just fully made Bitcoin legal tender now? I can't see us doing that anytime soon, but who knows?
Yeah, I wouldn't advise that for any kind of like nation to be controlling their currency. But I mean, it's basically what it is. It's a huge experimental petri dish, this whole blockchain ecosystem, and because it's decentralized, it means there are many people involved with it, and it's not like encapsulated in a factory where Elon Musk is building parts for his rocket ship and he blows that up, and it's just his company that's at risk here. It's other people, because it's other people's money who are investing, and so that we're all part of this very exciting industry that is still an experiment. And how do we get to this point where blockchain hacks aren't happening anymore, because, you know, blockchains are meant to be immutable. They are things that shouldn't be able to be hacked in certain ways. And so, you know, it almost comes back to what we're building is this idea of, let's build a platform where the best developers can have the highest training possible to make the most secure smart contracts within this ecosystem to work. Because, you know, it's all well said and done if the government provide education on scams and things, but, you know, if the technology doesn't work properly, then, you know, the industry doesn't work. So it's double-sided, and that's why we're so firmly believe that we have to be creating highly trained individuals to be at the forefront of this industry, and the users in this industry have to make sure they really educate themselves on scams and being really safe with their money as being a part of this whole exciting experiment.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great message, and encouraging people to get involved safely is a really good thing to do. And I mean, that kind of brings us on to how can people get involved with what you guys are doing? Like, I understand your first cohort will be later this year. Can you say a little bit more about that and what the latest is?
Yeah, absolutely. So you're right. Our first cohort will be launching in Q4 of this year. We are currently designing our syllabus, which is very exciting. And the way that we're doing that is we're working with companies to understand what skills are most desirable for them. What do they want to be in our program, so that we can build it around their needs and give our students an even higher chance of getting hired after the program. So what I would say to any and all of you who this has piqued your interest is, please do follow us on Twitter, on LinkedIn. You can follow both our personal and our company pages. If you would like to sign up to the platform, then there is a pre-registration link on our website, which we'll put a link for in the podcast notes here. But please do pre-register. We'll get back to you and keep you updated on a monthly basis as to our developments and exactly when the course will be kicking off. Dan, I don't know if you have anything to add there.
No, yeah, I mean, I think if you're interested in Web3 and you have an ambition to career path into the industry, and you have 2+ years software development experience, you know, we'd really love to hear from you and speak with you and tell you more about what we're building and keep you in the loop every step of the way until Q4 and when we actually launch this thing. Because, you know, we want to have as many individuals contributing to our first cohort as much as possible. So we can help the ecosystem as fast as possible too, and get this feedback loop of how we can improve our course over the next year.
I think a final point to add, Cam, is that our first program will be free. So there's that small benefit there for people that might be interested.
Brilliant. Yeah, I mean, if that's not incentive for people to sign up and register interest right now, I don't know what is. I mean, I'm also super glad as well that you guys are liaising with employers and hearing what they want to do, and the fact you're not rushing it, and it's going to be in a few months, and it's really good to hear, and it sounds like it's going to be really sustainable and employment focused, which I think is so important when it comes to like a bootcamp kind of system, that it's employment focused rather than churning people out. So I'm really really excited to see more about the journey of Calyptus, and sounds really exciting. And so if people want to follow you guys individually as well, is like LinkedIn kind of best?
LinkedIn is probably best. We are we've just set out trying to build our audience on Twitter too, so do give us a follow there. We don't have too many just yet, but we're getting there.
I'm in the same position, if it's any consolation. It's hard to grow on there.
It's difficult.
You're further than us. Yeah, we're definitely working on it. Find us on LinkedIn for now. The name Daniel Jones is pretty homogenous. But if you find Calyptus, Calyptus, I'm sure you'll put it in the post. But yeah, you'll find us from there.
Brilliant. Yeah, all the links will be in the description. Little LinkedIn hack as well, actually. Because Cameron Blackwood's a relatively generic name in Scotland as well. If you search up where the person works as well, even just their first name on LinkedIn, it will pop up. So it's quite handy. It's what I used to do when I was in technical recruitment quite a bit, just to try and track down the right person. Anyway, LinkedIn hacks aside, I'm going to do a podcast on LinkedIn hacks at some point, I think, just because there's a lot. It's useless information to me now, so I'll try and pass on that knowledge. But anyway, my diatribe on LinkedIn aside, it's been a real pleasure having you both on the podcast, and I've personally learned a lot, and I'm sure the audience has as well. So thank you both for coming on.
Cheers, Cam. It's great to be part of it, and we'll keep on listening.
Yeah.
All the best.
Appreciate it, Cam.
Thanks, much appreciate.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Cheers. Thanks as well to the listeners for tuning in for another episode of The Coder Career. I hope you have a great week and happy coding.